Well, hello and welcome back to Archaeology News Weekly. Many apologies for last week. We had one of these fabulous things, the computer crash. Anyway, without further ado, this is the Archaeology News Weekly and I am David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. The main headlines from around the world are as follows. We start with Bronze Age findings unearthed near Moscow, and on to America, where ancient hunters are said to be not to blame for driving mammoths to extinction. Staying with the Paleolithic, we move to Scotland and report on a lecture on the earliest known remains found in Scotland. We then move to Flores for a further report on the controversial Hobbit remains, and then look at an intensive survey in a valley in Jordan, which has been irrigated for over 13,000 years. There's discussion on the Indus Valley civilization having the first sophisticated exchange system, and next there's a protest over a hill fort land sale in Britain. Archaeologists are to study a Bronze Age barrow in West Sussex before it is destroyed by quarrying. And more damage to the past is highlighted as an ancient stone is moved from an archaeological site in Cyprus. Europe's largest roundel enclosures are unearthed in Bohemia. And finally, an expert says that ancient art was an instinct, a basic human need. Very much like this news. And just before we go on to the news, I have to tell you about the latest edition of Past Horizons. Past Horizons is now celebrating its 10th issue. Yes, 10 issues. This one consists of 48 pages of free-to-read content. The main articles cover current archaeological excavations and conservation around the world, including a report about the Indonesian island of Tambora, making preservation happen in Slovenia. We also look at one of our own projects, Archaeology Through the Keyhole, dating hill forts in Scotland. We also prepare for action with Dominic Hall, a field skills expedition leader, who's sharing some of his top tips for enjoying safe but exciting adventures. We also report on metal detectorist Peter Twin, describing a series of fortunate events in his life that led him to discover a passion for archaeology. You can find all this by going to www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. While you're on Past Horizons, of course, you can also have a look at some of the amazing world archaeology projects that are just going online now. And why not prepare yourself for next year, or maybe perhaps even get somebody a nice Christmas present by looking at Past Horizons Archaeological Tool Store. Anyway, as we say, back to the news. Well, here is a place that does not get into the news much. We've got evidence of human activity dating back 3,000 years being reported in New Jerusalem Monastery near the Russian capital of Moscow. Archaeologists have found ceramics produced in the Bronze Age around 800 years BCE. This is according to the monastery's abbot, Hugomen Theophylactus. I should also point out that they did find later artifacts relating to the monasteries, but hey, this is Stone Pages. We like prehistoric here. Woolly mammoths and other large lumbering beasts faced extinction long before early humans perfected their skills as spear makers, so say scientists. Jacqueline Gyo, a PhD student at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, who led the research team, stated that some people thought humans arrived and then decimated the populations of these animals in a few hundred years. But what they found is not consistent with this rapid blitzkrieg overkill of large animals. Archaeological evidence shows that humans developed advanced spearheads around 13,000 years ago. The rise of the Clovis culture was thought to coincide with the demise of the woolly mammoth and other slow-moving giants of the continent, leading many researchers to suspect that animals died at the end of hunter spears. Jill's team rules this out by putting a more accurate date on the decline and fall of woolly mammoths and more than 30 other large mammals that dominated the landscape as the ice sheets retreated from North America. To date the animals slide to extinction, the scientists examined sediment cores from the lake in Indiana. Specifically, the scientists were measuring levels of a fungus that is known to thrive in the excrement of giant herbivore mammals and nowhere else. They reasoned that more fungal spores meant more dung, which in turn reflected a larger population of these roaming mammals. The sediments also held ancient pollen and charcoal dust, which gave the team clues about the predominant plant life and the frequency of wildfires. The researchers discovered that the amount of mammal dung started to fall around 14,800 years ago, long before advanced spearheads became commonplace. The animals had been almost completely wiped out 1,000 years later. We know there were people who predated the Clovis cultures who were butchering mammoths in the area, she said. What we're suggesting now is the declines happened before Clovis' toolkit was adopted. These earlier people had tools, but they probably were not as sophisticated. Another theory that the larger beasts were wiped out by an asteroid strike around 13,000 years ago also looks unlikely in view of the latest study. However, by improving their hunting techniques, early humans seem to have played a major role in finishing off the woolly mammoth and 9 other mammal species that weighed over a ton. Way to go, humans. Scotland's foremost amateur archaeologist, the remarkable Tam Ward of Bigger Archaeology Group, was a guest speaker at the November meeting of the Lanark and District Archaeological Society. The subject of Tam's talk was about the excavation work at Holborn Farm, near Elsrickle, which turned out to be one of the most important digs of Scotland this year. He related how the site had been discovered through diligent field walking. Initially, they thought the site was early Neolithic, but a talk with an expert in prehistory revealed the amazing fact that some of the tools that the team had discovered were about 16,000 years old, or later Paleolithic. This was quite a revelation, as nothing this early had ever been found in Scotland before. What was also staggering was the fact that the people who came to Holborn actually walked across the area known as the North Sea. The route would have been via the Dogger Bank, which is the only bit left of the land route from Northern Europe. About 9,000 years ago, this route became flooded with the melting of the glaciers and the collapse of the Norwegian Trench, which led to a devastating tsunami affecting Northern Europe. Tools fashioned by the people of the Paleolithic period in Scotland were similar to those produced in Denmark, northern Germany and Holland. They came to Scotland chasing the herds of migrating reindeer and lived off their meat, utilising their hides for clothing and habitation. Since its 2003 discovery on the Indonesian island of Flores, the Homo floresiensis, nicknamed the Hobbit, has caused scientists across the world to debate whether the find is a new species or simply a variation of the modern human. The difference could signal a major paradigm shift in the study of primitive humans. The earliest known Hobbit lived approximately 18,000 years ago, although archaeological records of ancient tools suggest the Hobbits may have been alive as early as 12,000 years ago. Until the discovery of Homo floresiensis, scientists had widely believed that the last non-modern humans were the Neanderthals, which became extinct around 24,000 years ago. If Hobbits are indeed a new species, they will replace Neanderthals as the most recent non-modern humans. Aside from its unusual short height, Homo floresiensis was believed to have a very small brain. For many scientists, the brain size has become a focal point. Opponents of Hobbits as a new species contend that Homo floresiensis is simply modern human with a smaller stature and brain due to some pathological abnormality. Among the disorders proposed are Laron syndrome, which is insensitivity to growth hormones, cretinism, which is stunted growth due to a thyroid problem, and microcephaly, abnormal brain growth that results in a small head. Professor Dean Falk, though, anthropology at Florida State University, and one of the main proponents of the Homo floresiensis identity as a new species, was at Cornell to explain her position and place Hobbits, which she referred to as a lightning rod for controversy, into the history of other paleontological discoveries. She remarked that she viewed the 1925 as the beginning of the modern era of anthropology, referring to the year that Raymond Dart discovered his famous Taung baby. The Taung baby, estimated to be 2.5 million years old, is today seen as one of the critical factors in developing the theory that humans evolved out of Africa. At the time of its discovery, however, the specimen was rejected because it was contradicted by an earlier specimen called, yes, wait for it, Piltdown Man. It took until 1953, though, for the scientific community as a whole to realise that the Piltdown Man was in fact a hoax, composed of a modern human skull with an orangutan jawbone. In Falk's view, the current situation with Homo floresiensis is analogous to the situation faced by Dartstown Baby. She and her colleagues had been spending much of their time since descriptions of the remains became available in 2004, doing research that has led them to reject various sick hobbit theories proposed by other scientists. Some of the most convincing evidence came in 2007, when Falk compared the LB1 brain to several normal brains and several microcephalic ones. In every instance, the LB1 brain sorted into the normal category. Even now, the debate on Homo floresiensis has not yet reached a decisive conclusion, but Falk remains optimistic that there could be one in her lifetime. What will settle this, she says, is to have more fossils. Well, believe it or not, you can actually read about the next island up in the latest Past Horizons magazine, and myself and Maggie are intending to go to Tambora, and so, as it's only a short hop, skip and a jump, I'm going to go off to have a look at Flores for myself, so hopefully we might even be able to report back on it next year. Returning to this year, though, Dutch researcher Eva Kaptjen succeeded in discovering, based on 100,000 finds, that the Zarqa Valley in Jordan has been successfully inhabited and irrigated for more than 13,000 years. But it was not just communities that built irrigation systems. The irrigation systems themselves built the communities. Eva has given up digging in favour of gathering. With her colleagues, she is applying an intensive field exploration technique where, 50 metres apart, the researchers would walk forward for 50 metres. On the outward leg, they'd pick up all the earthenware and, on the way back, all of the other material. This resulted in more than 100,000 finds, varying from around 13,000 years to just a few decades old. Based on further research on the finds and where they were located, she succeeded in working out the extent of habitation in the Zarqa Valley in Jordan over the past 13 millennia. The area where she undertook her research covers roughly 72 square kilometres. She discovered that it had been inhabited off and on for thousands of years, but that this habitation was always highly dependent on the irrigation methods used by those who lived there. While the soil in the valley is very rich, there was usually not enough rainfall to cultivate plants without additional irrigation. The irrigation methods exerted a major influence on the people who lived in the valley. Power, in fact, was often dependent on controlling the allocation of water. Her research is just part of the multidisciplinary project Settling the Steppe, the archaeology of changing societies in the Syrio-Palestine drylands during the Bronze and Iron Age. Well, that's an incredibly exciting project, and in fact one that has relevance for the present day, given the way that we're looking at water. The Indus Valley's Bronze Age civilization may have developed the world's very first sophisticated system of wage labour, financial exchange and measurement, a Canadian mathematician has discovered. According to a new study of clay pots and ceramic tablets discovered almost 70 years ago in Harappa, now in Pakistan, the people of the Indus Valley had a detailed system of commodity value, weights and measures. Dr. Brian Wells, a researcher based at India's Institute of Mathematical Sciences, said that he had begun work on his thesis when he first saw photographs of the clay pots with markings which appeared to be in proportion to their relative size. But he was not able to test his thesis until he visited New Delhi earlier this month, where the original pots are stored in one of the city's Mughal era forts. The three pots each had different markings, the smallest with a V to indicate measure and three long strokes, the medium vessel had six strokes and the largest had seven. When he measured them, he found that they were in proportionate capacity with 3 to 6 to 7. The inscriptions on the pots match those on the bas-relief ceramic tablets, which he believes are tokens of exchange for fixed measures of grain or other commodities. The size of the pots, the largest is 2.7 metres in circumference and contains 65 litres, indicates an organised system of exchange for large-scale transactions. The bas-relief tablets are definitely some kind of exchange token. The pots are more than 1 metre wide. You're not going to carry them around, so the chits or tablets have representative value and they're being used in an economic context, so he said. In this paper, Indus Weights and Measures, to be published in the Archaeological Journal Antiquity next year, Dr. Wells suggests the tablets may be the equivalent of wage slips or credits for work representing fixed volumes of food. It's possible that wages were paid with grains dispersed from a centralised storage facility, or in the case of incised tablet materials, for construction projects and other short-term projects. Hundreds of people have staged a protest on land near a British Iron Age hill fort in a bid to stop it being sold and to keep it in public ownership. Worthing Council has already said it has suspended the sale and will be also reviewing the decision to sell farmland near Cissbury Ring in West Sussex. The council said the review was caught because of public concern about the site. The South Down Society said it was a famous archaeological site that needed to remain in public ownership. The group, Stop the Cissbury Sell-Off, said that 400 people gathered for the rally and walked across the land in question, letting off flares. A spokesman for the group, Trevor Hodgson, said that there was strong feeling and a massive turnout by people who had vowed to fight until the land was fully protected for generations to come. Worthing Council said the decision to sell two parcels of agricultural land, 57 and 132 acres in size, was taken following the death of a former tenant farmer. The council said the review would consider fresh options and talks would be held with the South Downs Joint Committee and the National Trust. Spokesman for the South Down Society, Steve Ankers, welcomed the move but called for a permanent halt to the sale. He said it is essential that this important site remains in public ownership. Cissbury Ring cannot survive properly on its own, and if it was sold off, it could end up being fenced off with unsightly paddocks with no access for the public. Well, just as a little side note, I decided to have a little look at this place, and it actually is a fascinating site. It is an absolutely enormous enclosure with Iron Age and medieval and Roman field systems within its ramparts. If you want to have a look yourself, I recommend you get along to Google, of course, and type in Cissbury Ring. That's Cissbury Ring. Anyway, back to the news. Archaeologists are to study a Bronze Age barrow in a corner of a sand quarry site at Minstead near Stedham in West Sussex. West Sussex County Council has given consent for the scheme submitted on behalf of the Dudman Group, which operates the Minstead site. Stedman with Epping Parish Council was told two other barrows had already been destroyed by operations at the quarry over the years, and this barrow was one of a series of five that extended to Fitz Hall on the Elstead Road. Clearance of undergrowth is due to take place this month in preparation for archaeological trenches to be dug and the findings assessed by experts in the spring of 2010. Councillors heard that depending on the results of the investigations, it would be decided if the barrow should be left undisturbed or preserved by record, where the barrow would be extensively photographed and recorded by archaeological specialists before it was destroyed. Preservation by record and subsequent destruction of the barrow would allow the Minstead sandpit to be extended. The County Council has confirmed in discussions that unauthorised workings at the quarry are still to be resolved, and the matter is with their legal department just now. Well, I can see where this one's going. Police officers in Cyprus are investigating what they believe to be an attempted theft of a giant 2,000-year-old standing stone, which has been removed from the archaeological site in Pissouri. Although police later found the stone in a nearby field, it's believed that thieves intended to return with proper equipment to transport the massive monument. Archaeologists believe that these stones were the height of olive oil extraction technology 2,000 years ago. In addition, they were also associated with a temple and later a church, as they were institutions with considerable power and wanted to control the important income from the olive mills. The incident took place approximately a week ago and was immediately reported by local residents to the Pissouri police station and the village council. Someone illegally entered the site and removed the stone. It appears that because of its massive weight, the thieves were unable to take it that far and had to leave it in a nearby field. It's believed a bulldozer was being used to remove the priceless relic, but they were unable to transport it very far. The stone was the last remaining one of three standing stones that used to lie on the site. The two others have already been stolen, presumably to decorate private gardens. A Pissouri resident said that the history of Cyprus is written on the surface of the land, and the landscape is being obliterated by a monstrous army of earth-moving plant whose drivers and owners seem to think it is great to rip the landscape apart, destroy the historical record and the beauty of Cyprus, and bury it beneath an ocean of concrete as they please. Well, well said, Mr. Pasuri resident. Czech archaeologists have uncovered four prehistoric rundel enclosures, a type of circular prehistoric earthwork, two of which are the largest in Europe, with an unprecedented extensive research accompanying the construction of a motorway bypass of Kolín, central Bohemia. After examining 40 hectares of land, the experts gathered hundreds of thousands of finds, and some of the sites included the four rundel enclosures. The enclosures of circular or oval shape are usually about 50 to 200 metres in diameter and appeared in Europe in the Neolithic period. Their inner space was not inhabited. Over 100 rundel enclosures have been uncovered throughout Europe, including several in the Czech Republic itself. Two of the enclosures that archaeologists have uncovered near Kolín are 214 and 230 metres in diameter. The former was surrounded by four ditches, the biggest being 4.5 metres deep. The other two enclosures uncovered were 80 and 75 metres in diameter. Besides Neolithic finds, the experts also uncovered a number of valuable remains of settlements from the Paleolithic, the Bronze Age, the Iron Age, the Roman era, and the early Middle Ages. Images pecked into stone hundreds of thousands of years ago could be for religious reasons or to mark territories or simple doodles such as those still made today by children and adults. That is according to Dr. Eckhart Malakte, a preeminent researcher into the history of rock art. Creating art as a distinct piece of our biological makeup, he told a lecture at Deer Valley Rock Art Centre. It is, in fact, an instinct, Malakte, a professor emeritus of languages at Northern Arizona University, said that no one would ever know the true meaning of images pecked or painted on stone because the artists were dead and did not leave a record or Rosetta Stone to decipher the image's meaning. The oldest known rock art is a 300,000-year-old panel of small chipped cups called cupules found in India. He believes that the images of animals and people evolved from early artist doodles. The non-iconic abstract images preceded the representational, or the human and animal imagery. These nice images are what people focus on, but he himself prefers the non-iconic art. Malakte believes that ancient artists did not peck or paint images for decoration, but rather as a hardwired need to create art as a survival technique, or a type of spiritual offering, to increase their odds of survival. The art of actual making an image was more important to them than the final result. The professors teamed up with evolutionary psychologist Ellen Disneyake to study a theory that the reason images found in Arizona are identical to those found in the Sahara and elsewhere is because humans have a core of biological universal images that they are born with. Malakte lists 15 human universals called phosphenes found in rock art around the world, including circles, zigzags, spirals, dots, and boxes, as well as rows of lines. They are the very same doodles that children draw in school and adults draw while talking on the telephone, he said. However, with the advent of cell phones and text messages sent while people walk or drive, he fears that the art of doodling could one day disappear. To learn more about this or to view the gallery of rock art from around the world, want to visit his website at, I'll give you this, spell it out, it's oak.ucc.nau.edu/malokti/. So go and have a look at that. I'm actually reading this fascinating book just now as well, which I highly recommend you to get hold of, The Mind Within the Cave. And of course, if you would like something to read, may I just remind you one last time that issue 10 of the Past Horizons magazine is out now. You can read it in several different formats, but to have a look at this one, issue 10, or in fact any of the other previous issues, go to pasthorizons.com/magazine. Can I also remind you that there are many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities in the UK, as well, of course, as the UK Heritage Calendar, Library and Guidance section, all to be found on Badger, www.bajr.org. And remember that more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thank you very much for listening again to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return again to us next week.